Hi everyone, I'm Matt Blair, and this is the Conservation Storytelling Podcast. Welcome to the shared platform, where we have conversations with a diverse range of field-based voices and talk conservation. Join us as we share ideas, create awareness, and fulfill curiosity about conservation in Africa. The day had been a long push, and we all welcomed the soft sand of the beach where we had set up our camp. Moments earlier, whilst collecting firewood, Ed Sayer from the North Luangwa Conservation Program gave us a very close flyby in his Husky, where I twisted my knee and Nick kicked a piece of firewood, which left him limping for a few days afterwards and cursing Ed under his breath. In the silence that followed as the drone of the Husky made its way into the distance, I took a moment with John Coppinger to have a short chat with him about some of his earliest memories in the Luangwa Valley. With our feet cooling off in the cool waters of the Luangwa River, sitting in the soft sand, we heard a leopard grunting on the opposite bank as the evening colours started to show on the horizon. A typical evening here. With a career that spans close to 40 years in the valley, John takes us through his earliest memories of visiting Luangwa in the mid to late 1960s, where he had to hide from the lions in their camp, proving how wild it was then and how not much has changed, apart from the elephant and rhino populations, which he talks about literally vanishing from the valley. John also tells us of a recce trip he had done into North Luangwa to assess the viability of starting up a tourism venture during the time of Mark and Delia Owens in the 1990s, and paddling down the Mweleshi River and the croc encounters he had, the same river we had spent 2 days walking down on the start of our trip. John's extensive career in the Luangwa Valley is colourful and too long to capture in a brief conversation, but John does give us a good idea of what the impact of COVID-19 has had on the valley and the role that tourism does play in conservation. Right, so here we are at the end of day 4. Feet currently taking in the cool water of the Luangwa River. We've taken a serious pounding today. I think we did a cumulative, 26 or 27
k's? 26, 27, I believe, yeah.
Jeez, serious mileage today.
It was a bit of a slog, eh?
It was a bit of a slog, but it was beautiful ground, especially early on. We were on, what was the name of that island? I don't even know.
Well, we used to call it Kamamaina Island. Now, I think that might have been given to it, so I don't know if it actually has a name.
Okay.
It was just an island caused as a result of a shift in the Luangwa.
Yeah. Last night we had serious serenading with a pride of lion roaming around, and that eventually made a kill just up from the camp. Got everyone's hearts racing for a bit, and then this morning we set off early to see if we could try and find a little bit of evidence of them, but alas. So we cracked on with the day. It was a long, long walk, not a lot of water on the way. And again, it was through another hunting block. But here we are with Mr. John Coppinger from Remote Africa Safaris. And John has had an extensive career in the Luangwa Valley. And this is pretty much your home.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it is, Matt. Yeah, it's been my home for the last 36 years.
36 years, John. I mean, okay, so can you take us a little bit through, how did you come to be in the valley initially?
Well, I was first introduced by my folks. My dad was surveying the Great East Road, and I must have been 11 or 12 at the time, I guess. And he was based out in Eastern Province for just about a year, I think. And so during that time, we'd come out regularly. My mother would bring myself and my two brothers, and we'd meet him, and invariably we'd come down here to the Luangwa. And that's when I first fell in love with it, I guess. Yeah.
What were some of your earliest memories of coming to the Luangwa?
Well, I guess I always remember Big Lagoon, staying at Big Lagoon with a couple of other families. I showed you Big Lagoon from the air the other day. And we had lion in camp, and everybody was petrified. And I just remember all of us running around, being shepherded by the, every one of those little camps used to be sort of guarded with one game scout. And he sort of shepherded us into the in Saku with the Sotenji, and spent about an hour cowering there waiting for it, because of course there was nobody to lock up or anything. It was fairly open camp. But still very exciting, you know, so I remember that very well. And I remember the elephants, I mean, in particular, in those days, you know, it was estimated that there were 100,000 elephants.
Wow.
And they'd started doing some research on the elephants, and they were darting them and numbering them, and had these big white numbers. You can see yeah. the elephant with 109 painted on the side. You know, but you couldn't go anywhere without every single bend, there'd be more elephant. And of course, the other abiding memory is the number of rhino, because, you know, the Luangwa was the stronghold of black rhino back in those days. It's ideal habitat for black rhino. And we saw them in abundance.
Amazing. And so from those early days, how long did it take for you to get involved and actively start working in the Luangwa?
Oh, well, it was a long time, because that would have been 69, somewhere around there, that I first came down. And so started working in 84. Yeah.
Okay. And where was your first job in the Luangwa Valley?
So my first job was at Nsefu Camp in the South Luangwa National Park. I was looking for a job as a pilot. I'd recently qualified as a commercial pilot, and I wanted to try and combine wildlife and flying somehow. And I was offered a job as flying only, and then I met Robin Pope, who just started up in Nsefu Camp at that time. And he was looking for another guide for the season, and I just couldn't resist the idea of being in the Luangwa for 6 months continuously, so I accepted it. And that was it, and I've done every season since then.
Amazing. Amazing. And I mean, did you meet Carol here in the valley?
No. I had met Carol previously through my brother. She was very good friends with my brother, who was living in South Africa, and she's South African. And but we'd been going out for a little bit, and so she came up with me in the first year. We came up together. She wasn't going to be left behind. And the second year, I think she didn't come because she was, you know, she was studying and she was getting involved and starting her kind of career at that time. So she didn't come the second year. But then we got married in early '86, just before the '86 season, and came up together. And that was it. We've done every season since then.
Amazing. And then you've had your two girls, Christine and Jen.
Yes. Too. Yep. That's right. Christine was born in '88, and Jen the following year.
And it was Chibeli.
Chibembe. We were running a company called Wilderness Trails, and during the dry season, we were based at Chibembe Lodge, which is quite a big lodge. And during the wet season, we were in Lusaka, where we set up a travel agency and had our office there. So we were kind of there for 5 months of the year, and then the valley for 7 months. And we were at Chibembe. It was quite a big lodge, so we were able to have kids. Christine was there from day three. She was born just across the border in Malawi at a mission hospital. And Jen was actually born right on the banks of the Luangwa in Chibembe.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. So, John, in your time since you started working in the valley, I mean, you talk about the days of there being vast numbers of rhino and vast numbers of elephant. Do it all pretty much started to disappear in front of your eyes?
Absolutely in front of our eyes, because when I started working in 84, we knew of six rhino in Nsefu sector, and we could see them. We could pretty much guarantee if somebody was, you know, spending a couple of days there and was willing to do a bit of walking, they weren't difficult to find, and we could pretty much guarantee them. So there were those six rhino, and it was in fact, I think the end of that year, we saw the last rhino in Nsefu sector. One by one, they got taken out. There was a cow with a two-year-old calf, and the last rhino we saw was that young calf, two-year-old calf, you know, in a complete panic. Its mother had been killed. It was desperately sad. That was right at the end of the season. The next year, I did a long walk back away from the river, and we found tracks. Incredibly, there were human tracks following it. So yeah. That was the end of it. And they lingered on in the Mfuyi area. Mfuyi is a much greater presence, and so they lingered on for another, I guess, 3 or 4 years. I can't remember exactly when they were wiped out there, but that was the end of that. Yeah, you kind of didn't believe it was going to happen. You know, you just couldn't conceive of a place that had so many rhino, conceive of them all being killed, but it happened, sadly, yeah.
Shame. And so you were working here sort of at a time where it overlapped when Mark and Delia Owen were up in the North Park, and they were facing similar or pretty much the same unprecedented poaching that was going on down in the
south. Oh, absolutely. I mean, North Luangwa had been absolutely wiped out. There was pretty much nothing left. They really had been hammered when Mark and Didi moved in there. And I can't remember. I think they moved pretty much the same sort of time as I started in the valley, or possibly a little bit later. Yes, and I met them a couple of years later. When they were keen to get tourism going up in North Park.
Yeah, you were telling us earlier today about that. And what was part of your recce to go and see if it was a viable tourism spot?
Well, I considered it a bit of a jaunt, really, because I just thought it was just inconceivable that we could actually start something up there so far away. No airstrips in those days. You know, the road was a shocker. It took all day to get there by road. We had to drive across the river and just literally find our way up the Mwalishi River. There were no roads. We had to bash our way through. And we loved it, of course, and Mark and Didi were, very enthused and really tried to get me to commit to. And I said, look, they kept doing a salesman job. And I said, you don't have to, I love it. But quite frankly, there's no ways that we could make this commercially viable.
Yeah.
But then I actually got thinking about it some months later. I sort of mulled it over my mind, just thought it would be fantastic. And I, one of our weaknesses has always been marketing. And Mark and Delia would spend every 1 month every year doing their doing a tour around the States fundraising. And they were incredibly effective at that. And they were extremely popular. They'd really written a very well-known book of their exploits in the Kalahari. So they were well known in the States, and they would get tremendous support there. And of course, everybody would then want to come. And I said, okay, look, I'll tell you what, we'll start a camp if you can punt us, if you can market us in the States, which they did. So, and of course, it suited them because they were fairly antisocial in many ways, and they didn't want people bothering them. And obviously, that's understandable too, because they had a project to run. So, so it worked very well. So, they would just steer the people to us and we'd put them through. And whilst it was very difficult because we were so far away, it kind of worked. It started off a bit slowly, but gathered momentum quite quickly.
And that was Mwalishi Camp, eh?
That was Mwalishi Camp. So we started that in 1990,
1990, incredible. We passed Mwalishi Camp on the way down.
Yeah.
And Nick was telling us that this is possibly the first time that it hasn't been built up in 30-odd years.
Yes. No, since 1990, it operated every year, every dry season, until this year. Yeah,
incredible.
Remarkable
COVID.
Year. Yeah,
COVID-19.
Unbelievable.
Jeez. And so we walked the Mwalishi earlier, I heard you briefly talking about doing a paddling trip down there. Was it quite an entertaining trip?
It was, very entertaining and quite scary.
Yeah.
In fact, we did it, I think initially, I was encouraged by my brother who was writing a book on the Luangwa, and he wanted to kind of center it a little bit around an adventure in the Luangwa, I guess. And so we decided to paddle. And as far as we knew, it had never been done. I've subsequently learned that there was a guy in the early 1900s who'd done quite a bit of paddling on the river. Anyway, so we hatched a plan to start our paddle. One of the big problems is getting access to the Luangwa during the rainy season, and particularly at that time, this was 1994.
Yeah.
Very difficult to get down to the Luangwa because once it starts raining, and you can't paddle this river during the dry season when the water's low because there are just too many hippos, just far too dangerous. So you have to do it in the rainy season, and just getting down here at that time of the year is a mission. There's only one or two places you can access the Luangwa. So what we did is we hatched a plan with Mark and Delia. We put our canoes in the back of his truck when it came on a supply run in Lusaka, and we drove up, and we had to wait at Marulupuku for some floodwaters. A big torrential rain came along about 2 days afterwards, and which put enough water in the Lubonga, which we needed to then launch into, which would then feed into the Mwalishi and down into the Luangwa. So that's what we did, and that trip, we went all the way down to the Zambezi.
So from the Mwalishi down into the Luangwa, down to the Zambezi.
Correct, yeah.
Jeez. Any hairy encounters?
Yes, there were. And of course, we drank a few beers the few nights before while we were waiting for water to come. And of course, Mark and his employees were all winding us up about how the trouble we're going to have with crocodiles. And of course, we didn't know. There was nobody who'd had any experience on canoes apart from of course, fishermen, and they didn't have issues with crocodiles. They had issues with hippos, and we were concerned about hippos, obviously, but in the rainy season, we knew that the hippos were dispersed and it was a time of plenty for them. So the chances of having, unpleasant encounters with hippos during at that time of the year was not really a consideration. The big unknown quantity was crocodiles, and as soon as we dispersed from the Lubonga into the Mwaleshi, we had big crocs after us, and they started by bumping the canoes underneath, just investigating.
Yeah.
Which of course was pretty disconcerting. And then probably about an hour later, one came, and it wasn't even a stealth approach. It was on the surface, came straight for the canoe. I was sitting in the front, and this croc made a full-on attack. Uh-huh. Lower jaw went into the canoe, fortunately into a flotation chamber, but the top upper jaw crunched down onto the gunwale, and when it realized it wasn't flesh or wasn't edible, it kind of slunk back into the river.
Jeez, a little bit disconcerting.
It was very disconcerting. And of course, now there's no way out. During the rainy season, the only way is walk. The vehicles can't get in, and so we thought, crikey. Anyway, we had a repair kit. We repaired it, and proceeded the next day.
Jeez, incredible. And okay, so John, I mean, we could follow through on the many stories that you do have, having spent so much time here. Has conservation always been at the forefront for you in the Luangwa Valley?
Well, I think, I've got to make it clear that I'm not in conservation. Yeah. I'm in conservation by my presence in the tourist industry.
Yes, sure.
Which I think is very often underestimated in terms of its protection value to the wildlife. And I think, yes, this year is a case in point, because without the presence is significantly reduced with no tourists coming in. And they've had to beef up, and I know that down in South Luangwa through the Conservation South Luangwa and the department, they've beefed up their anti-poaching very significantly. And I think they still, they are certainly having a few problems. And of course, it's not only the presence, but the downturn in the economy as a result of COVID adds up. But
So if I was to ask you quite a personal question about what the Luangwa Valley actually means to you as a person, what would that be?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, it's very much a part of my life. And if anyone suggested that I may not ever be able to come back to the valley, for instance, it would destroy me, I think. I suppose you'd have to move on, but the Luangwa is very central to our lives. My whole family, in fact, my wife and my two girls, one of which, Jenny, as is working here now. She's very committed. So yeah, it's intertwined in our lives. And there's no possibility that we would ever just up and leave, I don't think. Yeah.
No, fantastic. John, I'm going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me on this beautiful evening.
Thanks very much, Matt. Yeah.
The end of another slog. Let's go have a cup of tea and sit around the fire.
Very good plan.
Thank you once again for listening in. If you enjoyed this conversation with John, please take a moment to like, rate, or subscribe. Every little bit helps, and despite my inconsistency with getting these conversations out there, I will continue to do so. I hope you're all keeping safe, and I look forward to our next conversation. Cheers for now.